The test is in four parts, part 1, part 2, part 3, and part 4. Now look at part 1.
Part 1.
Listening. IELTS practice. Questions 1 to 5. You will hear a telephone conversation about voluntary work. You should answer the questions as you listen because you will not hear the recording a second time.
First, you have some time to look at questions 1 to 5.
Listen carefully and answer questions 1 to 5.
Hello, Volunteers Worldwide. How can I help you?
Hello. I'm ringing to find out about opportunities for doing volunteer work. Could you give me some information, please?
Yes, certainly. But before I do, I need to ask you for a few personal details. That's just because the opportunities open to you are dependent on your age and on what qualifications and skills you have.
That's fine.
So, if you could just start by telling me your name and age.
OK. My name's Ben Opperman, and I'm 22 years old.
OK, and what qualifications do you have, Ben?
I've got a BA degree in Social Studies. That was from the University of Kent. And I'm a qualified teacher. I've just completed my PGCE, my postgraduate certificate in primary education.
And you're interested in doing unpaid voluntary work rather than a full-time job with our organisation?
Yes, that's right. I'd like to do voluntary work before I start looking for a more permanent job.
How long were you hoping to work for us for?
I was thinking of 2 years at most.
OK. Well, for people in your age group, we have two programmes. Global Youth Contact and Youth for Action on Development. GYC, Global Youth Contact, is a six-month exchange programme which provides opportunities for young people from different countries to work together in local communities.
I see. But that's only a six-month programme.
That's right. But our other programme, Youth for Action on Development, requires people to volunteer for a year at least. On this programme, most of the placements are for 12 or 18 months.
Ah, that'd be the programme I'd go for.
OK. Now, do you have any other skills or special interests that might be useful for the kind of work we do?
Well, I've done a lot of conservation work in the area where I live.
Good, that's useful to know.
And I belong to a wildlife protection group.
Right, that could be very helpful.
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 6 to 10. Now listen and answer questions 6 to 10.
Do you have any questions you'd like to ask me?
Yes. Could you tell me what sort of placements are available?
Well, all our placements are related to the four main areas that we work in. That's education, health, social participation, and employment.
Education sounds like the obvious choice for me. And if I wanted to go ahead and apply to work on a programme like this, what do I have to do?
OK, well, our selection procedure is quite a lengthy process, I'm afraid. It can take up to 9 months. We get many more applicants than we have placements for, so we need to make sure that we get the best people for the kind of work we do. It's very important to realise that voluntary work like this is not an easy option. Although you'll have a brilliant experience with us, you are expected to work hard and make a real contribution. It is not just sitting around enjoying a different culture.
Of course, I understand that.
OK, so if you're interested, I can send you an application pack. You complete the forms and send them back to us. If you are shortlisted, we invite you to come for an interview. That's normally in January. Assuming you're successful, we then start looking for a suitable placement. While we're doing this, we ask you to raise some funds of your own, so that you end up contributing about 2/3 of the cost of your training and travel.
OK, fair enough. I suppose people get sponsorship, do they?
Yes, lots of volunteers do that. Then in June, we ask you to come to our headquarters for a week's training. This starts with general training, which is applicable to all volunteers. It includes topics like how to fit into new cultures, looking after yourself mentally and physically, and how to go about relating to the kinds of people you'll be working with. And then you'll have sessions related specifically to your placement. We'll tell you about the country and the area you'll be going to, about the problems and difficulties to expect, and about the kind of responsibilities you'll have once you're there.
And when does the work start?
It depends, but generally speaking, placements start in September and run for up to 18 months.
Sounds brilliant. Could you send me an application pack, please?
Yes, certainly. If you'd like to give me your address.
OK. It's 29 Park Street.
That is the end of part one.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part two.
Part two.
You will hear a university administrator telling a group of new students about the central campus buildings and the facilities they provide. First, you have some time to look at questions 11 to 16. Now listen carefully and answer questions 11 to 16.
Welcome everyone to the Brandon Complex, the geographical and, we could say, spiritual heart of this university. This is basically where everyone eats too, as you can see by looking around. There are many different cuisines here, Chinese, Indian and Middle Eastern, plus the usual fare of a local type, all in that corner over there. We have many shops here too, but the biggest is Wilson's right there, providing clothing and hardware. That's next to all the restaurants. Now, on the opposite side of Wilson's, we have three shops. The one in the corner there, closest to the restaurants, is for DVDs. Yes, the DVDs are cheap and affordable, and you can also rent DVD players as well. Moving on. In the corner directly opposite Wilson's is the Student Union office. Incidentally, you are all encouraged to join the Student Union, as a Student Union card gives you many benefits, including discounts on basically everything you can buy here at the Brandon Complex. Outside this complex, on the other side of the road, you can just see it from here, in fact, is a building that we call by the rather unusual name, the H Building. Next to this, on the other side of some trees along the main road, is the Engineering Institute, but that doesn't have anything to do with the Brandon Complex. One last thing is that just outside this door, near us here, you can see a grassy oval patch. Well, that's the playing field for what we simply call the fitness room, which is alongside. So you can put on some calories here at the restaurants and then burn them off at the fitness room afterwards. Oh, I forgot to mention this shop right here, in the middle, beside the Student Union. It's the bookshop. And, as you can see, it's always busy, always popular. You can buy newspapers, magazines and stationery there, plus a few clothing items as well, just as you can at Wilson's. Why don't you go and take a look right now?
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 17 to 20. Now listen and answer questions 17 to 20.
Now, I'd like to tell you a bit more about one of the buildings here, namely the H building. Despite its bland name, you might be interested in what goes on there. It is our main recreational centre, with halls, offices and space available for a variety of activities, mostly for those who want to get fit. For example, if you're interested in yoga, you're in luck, since 4 days a week there are free yoga classes. They have several levels, so if you're a beginner, you'd have to start with that. You can check the schedules on the wall there. Yoga used to be at night, but now it's in the mornings, but not on Wednesdays. Along those same lines, there's aerobic dancing in the afternoon. This shares the same room as the badminton games, which are on Mondays, Wednesdays and Fridays. The aerobics are on the alternate days, Tuesdays and Thursdays, and it's not restricted at all. Everyone is welcome to join, although the instructor may divide you up, of course, according to ability. And, just to show how diverse the H building is, there's even some spiritual solace available there inside the multi-denominational prayer centre, with individual booths and a variety of holy scriptures and texts available to read from all the major religions of the world. That's open all day over the weekend, but not at night time when the rooms are for private booking. Finally, for those of you of a cerebral nature, the University Chess Club operates at night. That's open from 8 p.m. every... is it Wednesday or Monday? No, sorry, Friday. And I think it closes at about 11:30 p.m. So, there's something for everyone in the H building.
That is the end of part two.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part three.
Part three.
You will hear part of a radio program in which the manager of the Apollo Leisure Centre is interviewed about the centre.
First, you have some time to look at questions 21 to 26. Now listen carefully and answer questions 21 to 26.
Next, I'd like to welcome Carol Brown, manager of the Apollo Leisure Centre. Carol, welcome.
Thank you.
Now, Carol, the Apollo seems a familiar sight, but how long has it actually been here?
Well, we started negotiations to take over the previous Active Life Centre that used to occupy the premises in 2000 and planned to open in 2001, although the usual delays meant it was 2002 before we were up and running.
Hmm. And do you have quite a mix of members, or are you focused on certain groups?
It's pretty broad, actually. There are something like 200 adult members, so that's our biggest group. But we also have as many as 100 youth members, together with about 50 family group members. And I think we'll see that section growing to 100 over the next couple of years.
Healthy numbers.
Yes, and we'll be developing the centre to make it even more attractive. We're hoping eventually to build in a rock climbing wall, which would make a useful addition. We've already opened our swimming pool, which is hugely popular, and we'll have a massage room open within 12 months.
Now, I understand you have different categories of membership?
Yes, to suit every pocket. Blue membership includes all facilities for the member and a guest at all times, which is good for people with unpredictable timetables. If you can make it during daytime hours, red membership gives you excellent returns for your fee. As for only half price, you can use all the facilities during the day, and they're actually less crowded then. Green membership is designed for people who are only able to come infrequently, and so, of course, costs less.
And there are chances to socialise?
Oh, certainly. Our cafe is very popular and is a nice place to wind down and chat after working out or whatever. In fact, while it used to shut at 8, we've extended that to 9 now, with last orders taken at 8:30. It serves a whole range of food and drink.
Mm. So if someone wants to join, what do they do?
Come and see us. Mm. We'll give you all the details. The induction process takes about an hour and a quarter, which includes 3/4 of an hour on average with a personal trainer, and something like half an hour being shown round the different facilities.
So we'd be well looked after?
Definitely.
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 27 to 30. Now listen and answer questions 27 to 30.
OK, now, Carol, can you give us some idea of what we could expect to get as members of Apollo?
Sure. Well, let's take next Monday as an example.
Mm-hmm.
The early evening would begin with the programme of classes. Of course, members would also be at liberty to do their own thing. I'm just talking about the listed classes that we'll be offering.
Uh-huh.
So let's say you're free to turn up at 4 p.m. You could spend an hour in a class that we call gentle exercise. This isn't a hard workout, as you might be imagining it, but a session designed for those who perhaps are not used to rigorous classes and would like something to ease them in.
Right.
The next thing on offer will be starting at 5, and again, it'll last for an hour. In contrast, this is what we simply call weightlifting. It's certainly not for softies, but this strenuous session is, of course, carefully monitored, and we wouldn't let anyone do anything silly.
Oh, well, that's reassuring.
And then, kicking off at 6:15, you'll be welcome at a class aimed at promoting better lifestyles, which we run under the banner of healthy living. We'll give you all sorts of useful advice about just living better.
Oh, sounds easier than working out.
And probably at least as important.
And rounds the evening off nicely.
Oh no, we still have one more offering.
Oh.
These days, so many people are working, frankly, more than they should be. And we try to combat the stress that that creates by encouraging those who can to take part in the class we call relaxation. You can learn lots of helpful techniques for staying calm when you think everything's going terribly.
Now you're talking.
So we'll see you on Monday.
Ah, now.
That is the end of part 3.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part four.
Part four.
You will hear a talk about stray cats. First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 40. Listen carefully to the talk and answer questions 31 to 40.
Good evening. I'd like to introduce Laura Dongswell of the Feral Cat Association. Laura has just returned from spending 3 months in Italy, where she has been working with local organisations to improve conditions for some of the estimated 1.5 million ownerless cats currently thought to be at large there.
Thank you very much. The principal problem regarding this issue is much the same in Italy as it is in other countries. Public awareness. The general public have become so used to the sight of ownerless cats in poor condition wandering their streets that they simply don't recognise it as a problem. While some will put out scraps of food, the majority see feral cats in much the same light as, say, seagulls, a form of local wildlife which is of no particular concern to or responsibility of the human population. Of course, there are plenty of individuals who do take responsibility for cats in their areas, providing appropriate food, emergency veterinary treatment, and perhaps indoor shelter. But these people can only provide support for a fraction of the vast numbers of feral cats that exist. So, what's to be done? Find loving family homes for all feral cats? Well, that would be wonderful, of course, but unlikely to happen anytime soon. The two main focuses of our work are sterilisation and education. Sterilisation is usually only performed on female animals. It may seem a drastic intervention, but it benefits both the sterilised cats who will not have to suffer the health consequences of endless pregnancies, and also the feral cat population as a whole, as controlling numbers reduces competition for whatever slender resources of food may exist. Animals to be neutered are captured and sedated at the point of capture to minimise their stress and discomfort. They are then taken to a temporary centre set up by a local organisation, and the operations are carried out under anaesthetic by trained veterinary surgeons, all of whom kindly donate their time. Now, while domestic cats can recuperate in the comfort of their owners' homes, feral cats have no such luxury. They are kept at the centre for around 24 hours, then returned to the locality from which they came. Dissolving stitches are used, and each cat that has been operated on has the tip of one ear clipped, a sign that the animal has already been neutered. A few animals have been electronically tagged and their progress monitored. In general, it has been found that neutering does not diminish an animal's chances of survival. On the contrary, the evidence suggests that sterilised females have a significantly improved chance of remaining in adequate health. The other focus of our work is, as I said, education, publicising the issue and raising awareness. Our current poster campaign is a translation of the widely used slogan, "A kitten is not just for Christmas." At present, resources are rather limited, but, funds permitting, a campaign of radio advertisements is planned, perhaps in the run-up to next Christmas, reminding people that families may quickly become bored with the responsibility of owning a domestic animal. Last year, we used newspaper ads featuring pictures of emaciated strays and highlighting the fact that abandoning an animal simply transfers your problem to somebody else. Which leads me on to the final point I'd like to make. Organisations such as ours are sometimes depicted as being mainly for sentimental animal lovers. Well, I make no apology for that, but our work has a wider importance than the welfare of cats. Ownerless cats tend to quickly fall into ill health and can become a health hazard in various ways, including the spreading of disease and parasites. Children can be especially vulnerable to this, as they are more likely to handle an infected or infested animal.
Thank you very much, Laura.
That is the end of part four.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.